भगवते वासुदेवाय
Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the canto number 10, the first chapter, Advent of Lord Krishna, the introduction. This morning, text number 56. Translation. Each year thereafter, in due course of time, Devaki, the mother of God, and all the demigods, gave birth to a child. Thus she bore 8 sons, one after another, and a daughter named Subhadra. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The spiritual master is sometimes glorified as Sarva Devamayo Guruhu, Bhagavatam 11.7.27. By the grace of the Guru, spiritual master, one can understand the different kinds of devas. The word deva refers to God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original source of all the demigods, who are also called devas. In Bhagavad Gita 10.2, the Lord says, Aham adir hi devanam, I am the source of all the devas. The Supreme Lord Vishnu, the original person, expands in many forms. Tad Aikshita Bahu Sham, Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3. He alone has expanded into many. Adaitam Achutam Anadim Ananta Rupam, Brahmasamhita 5.33. There are different grades of forms known as Swamsha, and Vibhinamsha. The Swamsha expansions, or Vishnu Tattva, are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas the Vibhinamsha, or Arjiva Tattva, who are part and parcel of the Lord, Mamaivamsho Jivaloke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. If we accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worship Him, all parts and expansions of the Lord are automatically worshipped. Sarvarahanam Achuchyeja, Bhagavatam 4.31.14. Means when Krishna is worshipped, everyone is worshipped. When Achyuta is worshipped, then everyone is worshipped. And Krishna is known as Achyuta. Sinayor Ubayor Madhye Ratam Stapaya Me Achyuta. By worshipping Achyuta, Krishna, one automatically worships all the demigods. There's no need of separately worshipping either the Vishnu Tattva or the Jiva Tattva. If one concentrates upon Krishna, one worships everyone. Therefore, because Mother Devaki gave birth to Krishna, she is described here as Sarva Devata. Ata kala upavritte Devaki Sarva Devata Putran prasurushuve chasto kanyam. Each year thereafter, in the due course of time, Devaki, the mother of God and all the demigods, gave birth to a child. Thus she bore 8 sons, one after another, and a daughter named Subhadra. So in this purport, Prabhupada concentrates on explaining this description of Devaki as Sarva Devata, in whom are the mother of God and all the demigods. Sarva means all, Devata. How can that be? Of course, this is, Krishna has not yet appeared in her womb. So this anticipates her role. This is a utterance looking to the future. Sometimes you can do that. You can speak of future things as present. I think there's a technical term, I think it's protreptic utterance. So that's what's done here. Anyway, I mean, Vasudev had promised that whatever children we have, I'll give to you, to Kamsa, to forestall his slaying Devaki on the spot. So he agreed, he was persuaded. So now it says, nine years passed, and every year a son, eight sons, and then one daughter, who was Subhadra, they appeared in. Devaki gave birth. So because Krishna is going to appear, she's referred to as Sarva Devata. So this is the point is that wherever Krishna is, there are also all the devatas are there, all the devas. So Prabhupada first says, spiritual master, sometimes glorified, Sarva Deva Mayo Guru, Guru in whom all the devas are found. That's because the Guru is supposed to be one who, in whom Krishna can be found. Just as Devaki had Krishna in her womb, so spiritual master is also one. Krishna is present by being a devotee. It means, a spiritual master means that person from whom we can understand Krishna and contact Krishna, because Krishna is not currently available to our materially contaminated senses, but he becomes available through his devotees. So if we want Krishna, we have to go to the devotee to find Krishna. And then when Krishna is there, everything is also there, including all the devas. The word deva, he says, refers to God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original source of all the demigods, who are also called deva. I think from Sanskrit, etymologically, the word deva is derived from a verbal root that means to shine. So they are effulgent, effulgent beings. So there are many devas. You hear, I've heard the term from various sources that Hinduism, there are 33 million demigods. I don't know if that's bona fide or not, or what they mean by deva. There are many classes of beings that are intelligent, powerful, and not exactly humans, like Nagas, Gandharvas, Kinnaras, Kimpurushas, and so on. They're not all devas, but the devas well, Prabhupada, if the word deva is not referring to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prabhupada always translates it as demigod. It means not fully God. Demi means partial. Not fully God. And sometimes Hindus who come here, they're a little upset with this, because we actually make this distinction between Krishna, who's also called deva, and all the other devas. The Krishna, the devas are actually jiva tattva. They're one kind of expansion of Krishna. And they're very powerful. They're also representatives of, just as a spiritual master is representative of Krishna in one way. So the devas, they also represent Krishna. They're called
vibhutimat sattva. They are representations, beings who are endowed with an extraordinary amount of a certain power of Krishna. For example, Krishna controls the universe. So when we see a big rainstorm is coming, and we can see thunderbolts flying in the sky and the earth shaking with thunder, and so much energy is there, we can understand this is Krishna. But actually it's Indra. Indra is given that supervisory power over thunder and lightning and rain and so on. That's his business. So that's Krishna's power that he's controlling, but he's delegated it actually to a qualified jiva. So anybody has any power. Just like if I have some power, sometimes we see that human beings are born with some extraordinary power or talent. Someone, they don't know why, they can just pick up a musical instrument and start to play, and you play a note and they'll tell you exactly what note it is. They have perfect pitch, and with extraordinary skill and ability, they can do something. That's also Krishna's power, that they have been delegated to them. Usually because of some past pious activity, they've been given that delegated power, although it's not theirs. So all power is delegated. Nobody has got anything without having it been borrowed to them from Krishna. This is stated in the Brahma Samhita, that everything, all dharma, all sins, all austerity, all the shastras, everybody from Brahma down to the tiny ant is operating on power delegated to them by Krishna, by Govinda. Yat datta matram vibhava prakata prabhava. That's what it says. It's all delegated to them in different degrees by Krishna. They all have some potency. If you look at an insect, the insect has some extraordinary talent that they can do. Spiders have this extraordinary talent of building webs. Mosquitoes have a flying talent that surpasses that of the greatest stunt pilot in the human. So everyone has got their delegated powers. They're all delegated. So the demigods are simply jivas who have more delegated power to play around with. So they're like the... Prabhupada explains, see, what we have to understand is that, at least to those of us who are born in the West, the idea of demigods is long gone. First of all, actually, it's associated in the West with what they call paganism. Pagan, actually the root of the word pagan means somebody who lives in the country. So the pagans were, Christianity when it spread into Europe, first spread in the cities. So the people who worshiped the old gods, the Greek gods, the Roman gods, whatever else, so they were called pagans because they're country people. That's where it comes from. So that was the older religion of Europe before Christianity. They worshipped many gods. And So when Christianity spread, they spread the news, one God. But the ultimate result of that was to think that there were no demigods at all. These were actually, they had a certain notion about what these demigods were. So to some extent what happened is that there was a gradually impersonal notions that crept in. But the fact is that there are demigods, and you can understand it that here this is the city of Philadelphia, and there's a regular arrangement for our supplies. We turn the taps on and water comes out, and we turn the lights on and electricity comes out, and electricity is there and the illumination comes. The gas comes out of the gas pipes. So there are different supply departments for us. And we understand behind each of those departments there's an administrator. There's some supervisor who takes care of that particular function. It's delegated to some supervisor. And then there's a head person, there's the mayor of the city. And then all these departments are functioning underneath his order. The universe functions in a similar way. There's the Supreme Lord, and then there's the Devatas. So people are worshiping the Devatas. But they have to be understood to be, as Krishna says, Aham Adirhi Devanam, I am the source of all the Devas. They are simply higher placed jiva souls. So a devotee, and they are devotees. They are functioning in responsible posts on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they should not be disrespected. But neither are they supposed to be thought of or worshipped on the same level as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're not to be independent of Him. And what we learn in this purport is that if you worship Krishna, all the devatas are automatically worshipped. All of Krishna's expansions are worshipped. So although the original person is one, he has expanded into many. He has different sorts of forms. Advaitam, Achutam, Anadim, Anantarupam. First thing says is he is Advaita, he is non-dual. And yet it says he is Anantarupam. He has multiple, endless forms. It says his form is endless. That means he has expanded himself into endless forms, and that his form also possesses unlimited potency, anantarupam. So although Advaita, still anantarupam. So there's an understanding of these different forms. Prabhupada describes here grades of forms Krishna has expanded. There's so two categories. The word amsha means part or expansion. Limb, actually. Limb or part expansion, amsha. So svamsha, his own amshas, and vibhinamsa, his separated amsha. Vibhina. Vibhina means separated, divided. So svamsha and vibhinamsa, the two grades or categories of Krishna's expansions. So svamsha is another name for what's called Vishnu Tattva, the principle or the category of Vishnu. So the personal expansions or the personal forms, although there are many of these forms, they are all one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then the vibhinamsas, the jivas are the jivas who are not in the category of God but are in the category of servant of God. Another word that Prabhupada uses for shvamsa is plenary expansion. Plenary means with full power. Sometimes they talk about a plenary session in the United Nations. So plenary means has full power. So each of the Vishnu tattvas, they have actually full power of Godhead. Whereas the Vibhinamshas are endowed with gradations of partial power. From Lord Brahma, who has a huge degree of Krishna's power given to him to exercise, such as the power to create the universe. Description of creation, let's say, for example, first book of the Bible, Genesis, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, he divided day and light, and water, separated land and water, all that. That's Brahma is being described. The activities of Brahma are being described. So that great, incredible act of creation, Krishna doesn't do himself. He says to Brahma, who's a jiva, you do it. Where does a jiva get the power to create a universe? Krishna gives it to him. So then flying around here, there's a little wasps, and they have the power to create their little nests with little cells that they put their eggs in. They have their creative power. That power, somehow or other, they didn't go to school to learn how to make those nests. And they do it. Also, that same delegated partial power. So that's Vibhinamsha. That's in the category of jiva. So the jivas are only one with the Lord in quality, but quantitatively are described as different. And he's great and the jivas are very, very small. Whereas the Vishnu tattva, they're all great. They're qualitatively one, quantitatively one. In fact, they're just one. You know, sometimes the relationship between Krishna and Krishna's energies is described in our philosophy as a chintya beda abeda tattva. Inconceivable. Krishna and his energies are inconceivably and simultaneously one and different. This idea of inconceivable, simultaneously oneness and difference, I've noticed being used somewhat carelessly in our movement. I was just reading a book by Satyaraj on the Panchatattva, looking at it, and he describes some of the members of the Vishnu Tattva side of the Panchatattva as their relationship of Chincha Beda Abeda Tattva. That's not right. Krishna and his Vishnu Tattva expansions are not inconceivably and simultaneously one and different. They're just one. They're all in the category of God. Now you may say there's differences, otherwise we can't talk about them. Well, somehow there are differences, but it's not the same as a Chincha Beda Abeda Tattva. So far as I can see, researching through Prabhupada, a Chincha Beda Abeda Tattva is used to describe the relationship between Krishna and his energies. The Vishnu Tattva expansions are not energies. There's Shakti, energy, and Shaktiman, the possessor of energies. So all the Vishnu Tattva expansions are Shaktiman. They're not Shakti. Radharani is Shakti, Jivas are Shakti, the Brahma Jyoti is Shakti, but the Vishnu Tattvas are not Shakti. They're Shaktiman. So Achincha Beda Beda Tattva applies between Shakti and Shaktiman. And there's another tendency in our movement to apply it to anything and everything. I heard somebody speaking about, for example, just recently, someone was giving a lecture, and they were speaking about the fact that there seemed to be a contradiction. He was worrying about householder life in our movement, and worrying over this problem, he was discussing that how absolutely necessary a solid household life is for any culture, especially Krishna conscious culture. Children have to be brought up properly, they cannot be neglected, they cannot be Varna Shankara, and so on. If there aren't strong family ties, then everyone is psychologically messed up, and so on. Then, on the other hand, he noticed all these texts which are warning us against the dangers of household life, against becoming attached to family members, about household life is a dark well. So he then announced that the solution to this contradiction was Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. I didn't raise my hand, but I just shuddered, because I've seen it applied sometimes by devotees to say everything, anything and everything is inconceivably and simultaneously one and different. That means you can't think anymore. That means there's no sense to say to somebody, oh, come to the temple and surrender to Krishna. No, no, I'm out here, it's inconceivably and simultaneously one and different. I once had a devotee put forward a proposal trying to reconcile Krishna consciousness and modern science, and he decided they were inconceivably and simultaneously one and different. Another usage of this philosophy showed up when Kirtanananda was deviating so much from the practices of Krishna consciousness and acting completely independently from any order of the GBC, and yet as part of our movement, the GBC was going to have to take responsibility for all his acts. And so the GBC decided in 87 that it had to expel him from ISKCON. We couldn't allow somebody to be completely independent, not follow any orders and do whatever he likes, and yet as part of our movement, we have to bear the responsibility. So that he was expelled from our movement. And while this was going on, he sent along fax or telex or something to the GBC. I think I've got it in my files somewhere. Arguing that he should allow to be part of ISKCON on the basis of Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. And quoted several sources like Ralph Waldo Emerson and F. Scott Fitzgerald, the American writer, to the effect that contradictions are okay. Do I contradict myself? Walt Whitman too. Do I contradict myself? Very well, I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes. And, some leaves of grass. You know, and a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of a little mind. So therefore he was arguing on the basis of Achintya Beda Beda Tattva, supported by other great authorities, that even though he wasn't following any of the rules and regulations of ISKCON, still he should be allowed to be part of ISKCON. These are the reasons why you cannot say the principle of Achintya Beda Beda Tattva can be used. between the relationship of anything and everything. All I've ever seen it done is applied to the relationship between Krishna and his energies. In fact, when I asked this question to Narayan Maharaj about Krishna and Balaram, because people were using this Chinja Beda Beda Tattva, and they said, I said, are Krishna and Balaram Chinja Beda Beda Tattva? And he paused for a minute and he says, no, they're just none different. They're not one and different, they're just none different. So that means to say that relationship doesn't apply between Krishna and his Shamsa expansions. So let's be a little careful. You'll hear this used very carelessly about our movement as a Chincha Beda Beda Tattva, as though we're going to go on some higher level of truth in which there's no logic anymore. I mean, once you've got that, as soon as you have any contradiction in your philosophy, you just evoke a Chincha Beda Beda Tattva and everything's fine. And all thought processes thereby stop, including rational discourse. I don't think Prabhupada would want to see thought processes come to an end on the basis of a Chincha Beda Beda Tattva. So anyway, be careful. So the Vibhinansas, the Jiva souls, they are one and different from Krishna. They are different. Although that's not exactly, I mean, the way, in one respect, the respect of being qualitatively one and quantitatively distinct, there's nothing achincha about that. If something is the same in one respect and different in another respect, then that's perfectly conceivable. That's not, but the relationship in general between Krishna and Krishna's energies, that is a chintya. That is a chintya. At any rate, Krishna includes, he's inclusive. He includes both the Svamsa and the Vibhinamsa expansions. And so when he is worshipped, everyone is worshipped. There's no need to make any separate worship. So, when Krishna is worshipped, all the demigods are automatically satisfied. And when our duty toward Krishna is discharged, so are our duties to everyone else actually discharged. Because of his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so he wants to say there's no need of separately worshipping all the Vishnu tattvas or the Jiva tattva. If any Vishnu tattva or Jiva tattva is honored or worshipped by us, it has to be because of the connection with Krishna, but not separately. The problem is that we are dealing with is because of Mayavad philosophy, prevalent in India, the relationship between Krishna and the devatas, the demigods, is not correctly understood. So many people have, unfortunately, even though they're followers of the Vedas, they've been systematically misled. So that they think that the absolute truth is one impersonal thing. This is Mayavad philosophy. But somehow or other, that absolute truth has become covered by illusion. Because of the covering of illusion over the absolute truth, which is one without any differentiation, their idea of oneness is complete homogeneity. The philosophy is called nirvishesha. Vishesha means distinction or differentiation. So the Mayavad philosophy is the philosophy that the absolute truth has no distinctions or no differentiations. So therefore, it is one thing, and there's no difference of parts. Neither are there any energies. Because once you say the Absolute and the energies of the Absolute, then you have also a difference. You see, we say achincha bheda abheda tattva, so that bheda means difference. They reject any bheda whatsoever. So there are no energies. Another way you can describe Mayavad philosophy is that the Absolute has no energies. So that where does the manifest world, where do all the differences and distinctions that we see come about? Where I perceive myself as an individual, I perceive you as individuals, I perceive this world of variety around me. Where has this, what is it? It's an illusion. Is this illusion produced by the Absolute Truth? No. The Absolute Truth doesn't produce anything. This is the philosophy. Where from does this illusion arise? You cannot answer it. At least they have no answer. It cannot be. It cannot arise from me, the jiva, because my existence as a jiva is in fact a product of illusion. It's a result of illusion, can't be the cause of it. And how can Brahman be covered by illusion? Then illusion be more powerful than Brahman. So there's this inexplicable existence of illusion. It's not the energy. So they say, anyway, their philosophy is that while we are in illusion, we have to think of the Absolute Truth as a separate, as one thing among many. So therefore, we may actually worship anything as the Absolute Truth. In principle, you can worship anything, but generally, out of piety, they'll worship one of the devatas. So you pick your Ishta Devata, your favorite god, and you worship that. So yes, you may pick Krishna, or you may pick Durga. Or if you really want to, you could pick your boyfriend or girlfriend. In principle, one of the proponents of this philosophy, in fact, worshipped his own wife. Famous Bengali priest from the temple of Kali in Calcutta worshipped his own wife and decided she was manifestation of Kali. He did. Yeah. So some people may not object, but anyway, that's the theory. So people, therefore, if you go to places that they have Hindu temples, you'll see like a supermarket shelf of deities. You know, all kinds of brand names, and you can pick whatever brand name you want. That's the system. And Krishna is just one among many. That's what you're up against. So then they come to this temple and they see that we are worshipping only Krishna and Krishna's energies, internal energies. So they say, where's everyone else? Where's Ganesh? Where's Durga? And we just have to point at Lord Jagannath and say, there. Sarva Deva Maya. They're all included in Jagannath. Is there. Uh, But they'll think that we're being unfair, that somehow or other we're leaving everybody out, but we haven't left anyone out. But we don't accept this this whole philosophy this is based on, that you worship one devata. But that actually, that devata you worship, you know that that devata is not the supreme. In your mind, the supreme is a one undifferentiated, unexpressible, unexplicable something that's not different from nothing at all. This impersonal Brahman, that's actually the supreme. So therefore, you know that you're worshipping something as the supreme, that's not the supreme. So that's idolatry. To worship any created thing as God, to mistake any created thing as God, is idolatry. Or they also think that actually I am God also. That's also idolatry. So this is the thing that we are up against in this, dealing with people who have been misinformed like this about the position of Krishna. So it's an offense against the holy name. Think any of the names of Shiva, Durga, so on, to be independent of the name of Krishna, equal to the name of Krishna, or independent of the name of Krishna. Sometimes Vaishnavas can worship devatas, but they do so only as they are worshipping someone as a devotee. Then you can worship like that. You see them not as independent of and not as equal to Krishna, then you can worship. So sometimes before any undertaking, Ganesh is worshipped. Ganesh is Lord Shiva's son with the elephant head. There was a head transplant story. And Ganesh is noted. He removes obstacles in this world. That is his worship for the removal of obstacles. So he can be worshipped for the removal of obstacles in the path of devotional service. That's stated in Nectar Devotion. And ritually, when there's a big sacrifice, sometimes they'll worship Ganesh in the beginning to remove obstacles in the sacrifice. So if your devotional service is to worship Krishna and you're worshiping Ganesh to remove obstacles, then there's no problem like that. Well, actually, we wrote Prabhupada, shall we worship Ganesh? And he wrote back saying that in your country, you don't have the proper facility for doing so. You can't do it properly, so it is not necessary. In fact, that was a letter that came to people in Philadelphia. I remember that. But then some other devotees who are earning money wanted to worship Ganesh, because you'll see that many people who make money worship Ganesh. Many shops, you go to shops in India, they always have Ganesh there, because the making of money is full of obstacles. Every day there's 1,000 obstacles that you have to overcome anytime you want to make money. So they're all ardently worshipping Ganesh. So they asked Prabhupada if they could worship Ganesh, and Prabhupada replied that they could, so long as all the money that they were earning would be used for the purpose of Krishna consciousness. Then they could do it. So same principle has to be done in connection with Krishna. Because then it's still removal of obstacles and devotional service. But if I'm just worshipping Ganesh for removal of obstacles in the path of my becoming a rich person, then that's separate. That's demigod worship. But he's worshipped as separate from Krishna or independently of Krishna. Anyway, any questions or comments? Yes.
Yeah, why is this, if Krishna is the Supreme Lord, there's no doubt, but in India, in a mass of people,
Yeah, he made a mistake, according to Narada Muni. He was chastised by Narada Muni for doing this. He is just representing Vedic tradition. So this is why this is not a matter of achincha beta beta tattva, but it's a matter for people on different platforms. So if there are people who will not worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they are too attached to the fruits of their work and they're just in the enjoying mentality, then at least they should be regulated. So therefore, the demigod worship is given for those people on a lower platform. So to encourage those people on a lower platform to worship the demigod, because it's better to worship the demigods than it is just to take and keep everything yourself and not understand that you're functioning on the grace of higher beings. It's the same as I was saying earlier about this householder business where family life is praised. Family life is good. You know what good family life is? It's called karma. And family life as it is practiced in America today is called vikarma.